Hi, this is Alex Johnson. Let's go back to the best.
Hey, Grace.
Yeah, David?
Do you want to go back?
Back where?
Back to the best.
Back to the best?
Back to the best. Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Back to the Best. I'm David, and welcome to our last episode of the year, our final episode of 2023. I don't know how we're here, but we are. And Grace and I are both so excited to be joined this week by Alex Johnson. You, of course, know Alex as Annie and So Weird, Aaron in Final Destination 3, the best Final Destination in my opinion, and Jude Harrison in Instant Star. We talk with Alex all about her acting career, her singing career, her newest album, Seasons, and really just how the entertainment industry as a whole has evolved since the 90s to now, especially the music industry. We loved every single story that Alex had. We are so excited that she could join us. Now, you might be wondering, where is Grace? Do not worry. Grace is just currently on the East Coast visiting family, but she was here for our interview with Alex. So you're going to hear Grace's voice in just a second. So I think without further ado, here is our chat with Alex Johnson.
Thank you so much for doing this with us.
I'm so happy that you thought of me to, in some way, help bring some light to something from the 90s. Let's go.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
It was the best time.
It was the best time. I agree. I think we were very lucky to have lived through what we did. It's definitely a very different generation happening now.
Yeah. Nothing feels the same at all.
Mm-mm.
This is kind of random, but it made me think of it. I was watching, can't remember the name of the movie now. It's number one on Netflix right now. If we're Netflix viewers, it's that one with Julia Roberts.
Oh,
I don't know.
Which
it's
one?
It's called. Okay. Anyway, the name of it, I'll think of the name of it, but there is a little girl in the, this is not a spoiler if you watch it. There's a little girl in the movie and she is watching Friends and it takes place like today. Oh. And she keeps like going up to her mom and she's like, Mom, what is it called? Like when you guys used to like watch stuff all the time and she's like reruns. And she was like, yeah, why did you guys have those? And Julia Roberts' oh character God. Is like, I mean, there wasn't a lot going on back then. Like we just didn't really have much else to do. But she didn't even know what reruns were.
I know.
That was like our whole lives. You just watch stuff over and over again.
I know. It's so true. The quality of content too was so awesome. I love following that 90s kid.
The Instagram.
Yeah.
90s kid for life.
Yes.
And I was on there. I discovered him because he posted something about So Weird or something at some point. And my husband and his brothers, they send each other things on Instagram. And it's usually something from 90, you know, like shopping at the mall, you know, in like 1994, like how relaxing it was, you know, like how it was a real moment to go to the mall, right? Like that was
really
our childhood.
Now it's just, now we're just on Amazon.
I know, no one goes anywhere.
And just think, you know, and obviously I'm sure we'll digress, or maybe not. Maybe this isn't the way you want to take it, but you know, like the kids in this culture, how that must be. So like, as a kid, it wasn't even a thing. I didn't even know what that was. It wasn't wired in my brain.
No.
Yeah.
Right?
I totally
to know
get
what that.
That
was.
Yeah.
Right?
That
I remember
feeling.
When I was like going to, it was 16 years old. And I remember being invited to friends like sweet 16s. And for the first time in my life, I had felt like I was nervous to go, but I had no idea what was going on. And it was anxiety. But I didn't know. I never heard the word anxiety.
Yeah.
Never heard of it. I would be so nervous. What are they going to like all these, you know, teenage thoughts, but you didn't know what they were.
No.
Yeah.
No one talked about it.
No. And then throw, you know, like a pandemic on top of everybody.
Oh, wow. Everyone really came out.
Everyone knew what about it, but in a good way, sort of in a good way, like more about mental health.
Everyone knew more about
hopefully taking it more seriously.
Yes. And also more about like diet. And like, you know, I grew up on a diet of like Captain Crunch, like Lucky Charms and for breakfast. Just think about that now.
Yeah.
I turned out okay, I think, you know, and I'm still unraveling as I get older. But I'm still unraveling to see if everything will be okay. But I feel like with my kids, it's crazy how much we've learned about that, like nutrition and allergy, you know, all that stuff. Cause I literally just had like, I mean, you couldn't put more sugar on my Rice Krispies as a kid.
Oh,
my God. You would pile it on to the point where it would like crystallize on the bottom of the bowl. And when you scoop, you'd get the bottom and you'd get all the sugar. Oh, it was it was what a time though.
And then off to school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, with your apple. That I'm like, you think I'm gonna eat an apple? It always went in the trash.
Every time.
Right?
Yeah.
So many uneaten apples from the 90s.
It's so that would be a great name for like a 90s, like a band, like, you know, like a cover band apples. Somehow. Uneaten apples, right?
Someone's listening right now, onto something, actually.
I kind of like that a lot.
Alex, we love Seasons, but maybe your next album, Uneaten Apples.
Uneaten Apples.
Yeah, maybe. You know, it's one of those things, like, we've really seen both sides, haven't we? It's my favorite Joni Mitchell song is Both Sides Now. She wrote it when she was so young, and then she went and did like a re-recording of it. It's so beautiful. But no, Raising Kids Now, Seasons came from being, I was pregnant with Angus when I wrote most of the album, and it was during the lockdown, and we changed so much. It's so crazy. Like life, the seasons of our lives, who we become when we learn and grow, and how culture changes us, and how, you know, and yeah, the 90s really did a number on me. So, you know, like, it's weird.
Yeah.
It's just to be here now looking at this thing that I couldn't imagine. When I was a kid, I was just like banging rocks together, trying to find gold, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm ancient is basically what I'm trying to say.
At least we all are.
Don't let me ramble.
Oh, you ramble.
I had a baby not long ago, and I've got to tell you, she's only 8 months old, but it's funny, just my parents saying certain things, or now that she's trying food and the 90s were a wild time. Like, I'm like, Mom, nobody does that anymore. Like,
oh my gosh,
time has happened. Things have progressed, and we're just not continuing those. We're not doing that anymore.
I know. You know, there's also
kids.
No, there's the other side of it too. Like, you know, there's some things you don't want to open the box, right? Like, I mean, there's ignorance is bliss. And I feel like now, in the 90s, there was just things that you didn't talk about, you know, like generational trauma wasn't a conversation you'd have at like a New Year's party, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Coping with my generational trauma. But what's so kind of crazy is, like, I've been really enjoying kind of like thinking on the other side, like, wait a second. No, like, my lineage did do some pretty amazing things. Like, you know, my lineage survived from like 600 BC.
Yeah.
So if you look back, like, there is some persistence, there is some strength, there's some virtues to my family trauma. Thank you very much.
Yes. So,
there we go.
Yes. Like,
they fought for me. So I'm grateful for that.
You know? So
it's those things. Because there's just so much information out there now on, like, you know, fixing the family trauma, all these things. It's like everybody's a little therapist in their own right, which is great and amazing. Mm-hmm. But that's what we're dealing with in culture, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It goes from like a very, I guess, a simpler time. And it's great that it was simple, but you want the best of both.
Mm-hmm.
Like the simplicity that was in the 90s, but then the awareness that there is today. I might not be using the right words, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get there in 2090.
Yeah. We'll really look forward to when they mesh. It'll be a great year.
2090, here we come.
Here we come, baby.
Even though, I mean, obviously we want to talk to you about your experiences on, you know, shows like So Weird, Instant Star, everything. But even I feel like now whenever you hear about like child actors today, even like the laws, as much as like how much they can work in a day and like how much more protected they are now versus the 90s, I feel like has changed so much.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I'd love to get on a call with Chrissy Carlson Romano. I was almost able to get on one of on their podcast in LA, because she does an in-person podcast, but it was when I was playing my Seasons album release show, and it just didn't work out. But man, yeah, being a child actor, I mean, they wanted to fly me down to without my parents. Like, they wanted to fly me down to do those Disney commercials.
Oh wow.
The what were they called? Come on. Express like Yourself commercials.
Express Yourself, yeah. Region.
Yeah.
Right? So I was like, what, 13, 14, maybe? I don't know, not old enough to be just at that age, but still, you know, like off to Los Angeles, Canadian girl, you know, like heading down there. And it was just, I'll just go with her school teacher that I hadn't met. And it was like, And I'm so grateful that my parents were like, no.
Yeah.
That's not.
I don't know. Because even though it was Disney, like Disney has this kind of like, well, we're Disney. It's yeah. like, okay.
I'm still 13.
Alone. Yeah.
it's my kid. Like, yeah. Sir. So that was always kind of, I'm glad that my parents were always so kind of fought for like my rights, I guess, as like a young act, like kind of, okay, like I think her day's pretty good. Like mm-hmm. they could start wrapping it up. Cause I think they will take, you know, when you're dealing with that much money on a film set for a day, they're going to take as much as, you know, they're going to work it as much as they can.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So wow. I was very lucky to have like such solid parents, because I think things could have gone any way as a child actor. Right?
Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah.
I mean, anyone we've talked to who's been, you know, in different shows at that time, every single person says that it all came down to their parents making sure that they were protected on set.
Yeah. I was just going to say the exact same thing. I'm seeing a lot of actors and actresses. Like I just saw Natalie Portman, who was speaking to Drew Barrymore, talking about how I wouldn't put my kids into acting. I've said, how do I even say it? I'm not, you know, creating the carpet for my children to walk down. If they discover it naturally, you know, and they're like, they're passionate about it. And it's like, you know, then that's one thing. But I'm not going to kind of make it their life at such a young age. So it's all they know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
And I think we feel that way because there is something dysfunctional about children working full time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've heard it in interviews, and it might have been, was it Natalie Portman, saying how it just, you are immediately as a child in an incredibly adult environment. And you're surrounded by adults mostly. That's what she, I believe it was Natalie Portman, but I'd heard an interview with an actress talking about that and how that can, I guess, have some benefits. Like you get maybe like some wisdom, like you hear from people that are older than you, but you're just a kid and you're working full time. Like my first job was at like a water ice stand in my town when I was in college. Like I worked like a couple hours a week and it was fun. But I think I'd imagine, I guess, for a child to be put in such an adult environment must be a little bit strange to their mind.
Yeah, it was, you know, I think it's so much a part of who I am now. There's so many attributes to working full time as a child that have like traumatically stayed with me my whole life. But I think those traumas, I found a way to use them the best way I could. Like I run my business, like I'm an indie artist, but I run my business. Like I am like the lead of like the indie, like it's like hilarious because that's all I know. Sure. I mean, I show up and I have, you know, like it's kind of, I was really honed to work. So I have a really hard time relaxing and feeling like I deserve it and feeling like I deserve to enjoy my life without, you know, looking for that, the value of like, you know, my value comes from having a good hard day's work and, you know, those things. Yeah. And I think that as a twin working your whole life, how do you break away from that? You know, I think what happens is I think a lot of kids who come from being child actors, they fall into substance abuse. They fall into, because they're trying to escape the pressure.
Yeah.
They're like, this is too much pressure. I need to live my life and I need to like expedite it because I feel like I've lost years having to be on for everybody else. So I'm going to go and really experience life. So then it's like too much of a good thing. Right?
Too much of a good thing.
Right?
Yeah.
You started singing like extremely young age, right?
Yeah, I did. I was singing. I mean, I was singing at the Canucks games. I won an anthem contest when I was 11.
Oh.
And I was out on the ice at GM Place in Vancouver and I sang the anthem. It was just absolutely, I had braces and I was wearing headgear at that time at night. And I just remember I had a huge crush on Bertuzzi and I went out on the ice and I felt like such an idiot. I'm in this, they gave me this big jersey that said Johnson on the back.
Aww. Yep.
And I went out and I sang and yeah, you know, it's so interesting. My singing career, so many different ways it could have gone. Like, and I mean that, you know, musical theater, like I auditioned in front of Julie Taymor or like, you know, David Foster wanted to sign me when, and I was like, me and Bublé were hanging out doing like all of his, you know, his charity events. He would have me come and sing the Celine Dion songs while David Foster was on the piano. And, you know, it was so funny. I was really, I don't know what it was. I was just at such a young age. I was just, I had this range, and I can't even say that I really worked for it. I feel like it just kind of came natural with me as a kid, you know, and I've always wondered, like, was it a blessing? Was it a curse? You know, I think in the end, it's definitely been a blessing now that I'm a mom myself. And I look at, like, thank God I made some good choices in my life, because man, so much as a child came at me for that.
I mean,
and then how did you, oh, go ahead. Oh, sorry. God, no, the Zoom delay.
The Zoom delay. My God.
Do you want to go, David? Okay. I was just going to ask kind of how you made that transition, if you will. How did you get into acting as well from singing, or did they just kind of go hand in hand for you?
They went hand in hand. I was just from a really small town, and I was, you know, I had a ton of siblings, and it was just kind of like, you know, I wasn't like, you know, the prize child, you know, and like the both parents working, you know, this is like our, it was like, I was just a mess. Like the how, like I was like cheaper by the dozen, you know, like the beginning of Home Alone. You
yeah.
know, I was one of, you know, many kids. And I just, you know, there was a little agency in my town, and it was us connected to a dance studio. So I wanted to do hip hop dance. So I'm like joining hip hop, and I had a really bad stutter as a kid, because I could never get a word in edgewise. So when I was a kid, I would try to be like in the conversation, and it was, there's so much like so much people talking in the family all the time that I just started, like, when you got a moment to speak, I'd sabotage it. So it'd be like, so I'd be like, finally, like, it's like, I mean, could I have a Coca-Cola? And yes, sure. Like, it just became this like horrible thing. So for me, singing was the way that I didn't stutter.
Oh, wow.
People listened to me. I felt like, yeah, it was like a lineage of stuttering. My dad stuttered when he was a kid. It was really bad. And I got picked on for it. But singing was like, I didn't stutter when I sang. So I was like, all right. So I'd be like, Mama, you know? And I was like, I need a hug. And I'd get hugs. And I was like, this is great.
Aww.
Like, yeah, this is like my new language, you know?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So, and then I decided, just to answer your question, I went down to the local agency and I just basically sang and said, you know, I sang for the agent there. And he said, well, you're hilarious and we're going to get you out for auditions. And I didn't even know what that was.
What an audition was?
And lo and behold, what an audition was. I didn't even know what it was. And,
okay.
You know, and there we are. Henry Winkler flies me out to LA.
Henry Winkler.
And I land the lead of a Disney show.
Yeah.
Like, how?
That's wild. I always forget, what was Henry Winkler's connection to So Weird?
The Fonz?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was like, there was a music aspect to So Weird. To be honest, there was, I'd have to, I do remember being told the story, and there is a reason, but I don't have it on hand. But there was something, the music aspect, he was an executive producer of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I think he just got in with Disney Channel, and Disney Channel hadn't been around for a long time at that point.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And it's a smart move, you know. Wouldn't
oh,
you
yeah.
Henry Winkler?
Oh
let's
yeah.
Let's go. And yeah, that was really funny because everyone said, don't call him the Fonz. And that's the first
don't
thing I did when I met him. I was
like, oh my God, I would have done the same thing.
Yeah, right. Come on.
You have to.
I would have said it right away.
So funny. Yeah.
When you flew to LA for the first time, then was that to do your audition for So Weird, or you did a audition tape and sent it in?
I flew down, and that was the screen test.
Okay.
I flew down for the screen. So I did the first audition in Vancouver at Shoreline Studios with casting. And then they liked my tape so much that they flew me down, and it was me and like two other actresses. And I believe it was Mary Elizabeth Winstead. I know that Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who I ended up doing Final Destination with, she's absolutely lovely. I know that me and her were up for the Britney Spears movie of the week together. And there was me and another girl. But I'm also certain that she was also there auditioning for Annie Thalen as well. So it was me, a brunette, and there was another girl. They had the diversity. And it was like, okay, who's going to get the role? You know, yeah, like it could go all these different ways, right? Because mm-hmm. Annie's family was off in Africa. They were doing missionary work. It's like, yeah, who's the girl going to be? And they choose, you know, the albino girl.
Listener, she says with a little bit of like a presentational,
the arms are out,
hand gesture. She's owning it.
Yeah, it's the only time that it's my albinoism has ever so much so worked for me in my life. I was like, wow, the girl with no eyebrows, she's the one.
You're in. Did you watch the first two seasons of So Weird to like help prepare for your audition or anything like that?
Not the full seasons. I did watch because I wasn't on, like, I had like Pingu in Canada, you know. Mm-hmm. I had like, we had Degrassi, we had like Kids in the Hall, you know, we had like Pingu. And, you know, I didn't have access to it. So when I did see some of it, I saw, you know, and when I came on to the show, Cara Delezia was leaving that same episode. I'm very grateful that I had no idea what was going on.
Yeah.
So I just.
Yeah.
Honestly,
because I can, I feel like going into a show that's already been on and then stepping into that lead role, that could be like a little bit intimidating.
I like the first scenes, you know, that I'm shooting. Like, I mean, and to this day, like, I don't know, you know, to this day, it's like, what an interesting plot twist.
Yeah.
But I was definitely like I was just that kid, you know. I was from a small, like a big family, and I was just from a small town, and I just had no idea. Mm-hmm. So thank God for that. It was good. That 90s naivete, you know, that we talked about earlier.
Honestly, yeah. It's like I would much rather just not know than have to like answer the same question the rest of my life.
Oh, yeah.
I know, right?
It's so much easier to be like, no idea.
Yeah. Nope. Next. No clue.
But also, what
or maybe take some pressure off too.
What an amazing opportunity for you, though, to get to be the star of this show that people are already watching too.
Yeah, it was really special, but it also came with a lot of people who like did not like the new look of So Weird, which I understood. But when you're young, and you're young, and you're seeing comments, it's like, what did I do? Right? Like, I'm just like a kid playing a sport.
Especially because I feel like that was so early on to like people going online and leaving comments too. It was like a brand new thing for everyone to suddenly know what people are actually thinking about you. And
I
hate it.
Not just the critics anymore. It was like just real people watching.
I know.
Whatever they wanted.
That's right. Yeah, it was a really fun experience. I loved the cast so much. Like Eric Lively, really, I felt like he really was protective of me on set, and was just like an older brother. And Patrick Levis is so talented, and Eric Von Detten, like, talk about, you know, at that time. Yeah. After that, he did Princess Diaries, and
huge.
He did Sid, Toy Story, right? Like, and what a beautiful boy too. Like, you know, just being a young girl, and Eric Von Detten, but just building those friendships with these people. And Mackenzie Phillips is one of my favorite people ever. She's a legend. I mean, everything that she's conquered, she's just she's an icon. She blows me away, you know, and her stories were just like a mate, just unreal. Talk about, I mean, everything, right? Mamas and the Papas, and just what she grew up, her life in LA, and all the stories. I was just like, my eyes were just like huge when I'd listen to her stories, you know?
I bet. Oh,
I know.
Did you get any advice from Cara before she left the role?
The torch?
Like, did she tell you? Yeah. Did she tell you anything or give you any tips or just anything at all?
Not really. No, there wasn't a lot of like, you know, it didn't feel like it was a positive thing that was happening. Mm-hmm. So when I came in, it felt to be like, I was just kind of like, you know, I'd be inauthentic if I were to say that something like that would have been nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a little heads up, a little tip.
Yeah, totally. So that guy's a creep. Mm-hmm. That guy. Yeah.
Avoid them.
Right.
Do you have any like episode that stands out in your head of like a favorite episode that you got to film for So Weird?
I have an episode that stands out just because I completely lost my voice in Mr. Magnetism.
Oh.
So the episode, I actually ended up working with him again. He was the lead of The Listener. Remember the show The Listener on CTV in Canada? It was a big show here, and I got to play a character on that. So that was fun to work with him again. I am blanking on his name right now, but Mr. Magnetism, that episode, I was singing push me, pull you. So I lost my voice entirely for like a week. Like I had laryngitis, like the first time in my entire career, what was I, 16, lost my entire voice, gone. And what they said, like when you have, you know, 140 people showing up to work, you can't just not film. So I had to mimic all my lines. Like I had to, for the week of filming, I had to, and they were like, we'll ADR it in after.
Oh my gosh.
I couldn't speak. So the whole episode is basically ADR'd.
Everybody right now is going back to rewatch that episode now to see if you can see it.
I know.
I sure didn't catch John. Great job.
Yeah.
I never noticed.
I thought I did pretty good too. No, on my Patreon, I do this. I'll be going back to So Weird eventually, but I do this commentary on Patreon where I do like, I rewatch my episode. So I started with Instant Star. I'm on season 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I watch it in real time, and people can listen to like the behind the scenes as to what was happening at that time and in my life. And like, and it's so crazy how much it brings back, because I don't watch the stuff. I can't remember the last time I've seen anything. Maybe I think that'd be weird if I did.
Just
I don't know.
Every night, let's see what I did.
Yeah. The popcorn. So I just like, I'm watching it through, and it's hilarious because so many things are coming back, and I'm going and I'm saying it in live. Like, I'm just going, oh, at this time, you know, I was like, you know, whatever it may be. So it'll be fun to do that for So Weird.
Yeah.
To go back.
I imagine it brings up so much. It's like listening to a song, and you remember where you were when you heard it and what was going on. It just all kind of comes flooding back.
That's the thing. You have to grab the memories again. Sometimes it's a bit tough, but they are there in all of us, just grabbing it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And also that alone, I feel like, is such a nostalgic thing, because I used to watch like the DVD commentaries whenever I'd watch a movie, and it's like, you're doing the same thing just in real time now.
Yeah.
I know, right? It's kind of clever.
Or even like the rewatch podcasts. I feel like it's a way for fans to hear. Almost like, they would have the commentary, like the director's cut or something, but you can hear from the actors. Mm-hmm. It's so cool for us as listeners just to hear the behind the scenes or what was going on. Or like what you just told us now about having to do, you know, voiceover for the entire episode. Yeah.
Well, this is why I love this idea of your podcast so much, is that, you know, in my Patreon, I also have the commentary, but I also have like my retro throwbacks. So I go back in my past, and like an email from Barbara Streisand, or like working with David, like all these things from my past. And why it's so fun is because I feel like everything was just better back then. And I mean, like, what I mean by that is there's so much of so much now. And I think, especially when it comes to TV shows, like I think some of the best TV shows have been done. Mm-hmm. So we might as well just redo them all.
Yeah. Enjoy what we love. Yeah.
Right. Am I being biased or?
No.
Oh, no.
Not
no.
at all.
Listen,
it's so
this
true.
This is what David and I do all day long. You know, 24/7, we're just like nostalgic this, revisiting this, sending each other posts from something that makes us feel like the butterflies, because we just remember watching it at that time. It was the best. Oh. The best.
I mean, I had Hanson, you know, poster on my wall, and it was like those moments, right? Or like the Babysitter's Club, the book series.
Oh, another classic.
Loved it.
Like, so good, right? The X-Files.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
The X-Files, my parents watching the X-Files without being off in the back sometime after dinner. All those things from your childhood. You know, this is all we have. All we have is you guys. It's a lot of pressure.
I'm rethinking everything. I'm like, okay, what have we asked her? Is it good enough? Should we just change everything about this interview now?
Right? Because it's just like, now I'm having such a hard time too, like with TikTok. Like, I really am. Like, I'm, you know, the algorithm is just not, I make music. Mm-hmm. I tour. This is what I do. This is how I connect with people, is I write songs. So it's hard for me because it's like, wait a second, like, you know, I need to be like some TikTok, like, what am I doing on TikTok? Am I a comedian now? Is this what I'm doing? Because I'll do it. But is that what I'm doing now? Am I making albums? Like, right? Am I doing seasons and then doing a comedy special? Like, what's
well, that? And it's like, all right, who now am we gotta come I? Up with a TikTok dance for every song on Seasons.
Yeah, it's like that kind of
so
stuff.
Stressful.
For me, it's so stressful being a musician now, because they're, you know, they look at that. It's not just like Greta Garbo, you know, look at, you got the good legs, you know how to dance and you can sing, like she gets the part, you know, like those old Bugsby Berkeley films, you know, these girls were amazing at what they did. But now it's like, you have to just be so, everything has to be, it's actually, I think, insane.
Yeah.
I don't think it's healthy for artists and creators. I think it's kind of nice. Like, yes, we can do it all. Yes, of course we can do it all. How wonderful. Mm-hmm. But like, maybe just like stick to something that you really love doing and that you really feel like you can cultivate well in this day and age, and give that to the world, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I just feel like now, right? And that's, I think, why people are dealing with anxiety, because it's like, it's never enough. You know, you don't just make a record and put it out and tour it. Now it's like, you got to
do so much more.
Oh my gosh. So much more. I can't imagine that kind of pressure. Like, even just the numbers game, like, oh, is it getting enough views? Do I have enough followers? That stuff matters a lot now. And before, I guess you would just put out a single or an album and it was just your work for the listeners. But now it's like a number attached to it. And you see people watching your videos and interacting with you. And it just, it's got to be a lot.
I'm not asking for it. I mean, I get sent, like, you know, reaction videos. And I'm like, who is this guy? And why do I care what he thinks about my song? Right? He's just reacting. He's reacting to my song. And I'm like, okay. And I'm actually invested. Like, I'm like watching it now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I'm watching it for like 30 minutes waiting for my part to come. And I'm like, who is this guy? What am I doing with my time? Like, right?
I know. Well,
especially like with, you know, because you write your own music too. I feel like you have so much more invested than like if you were just singing someone else's song. It's like you're hearing what someone thinks of your own words.
Yeah, I know. It's interesting. There's a real, I have a real, like, I call it like this punk nature, because I've been signed so many times and I was like given the keys to, like, you know, I was at the Sony parties and like Brandy's telling me how beautiful. I'm like, stop it. Like, you're gorgeous. And like, Beyonce's there. I got Gerard Butler, you know, giving me his room key. I'm like, no, Gerard, you're drunk.
Gerard.
I got, you know, like, who's over there? John Mayer. We're both in black, you know, like, this was where I was in my career. I had like, I was with Sony. I was with Capitol. Like, it's so interesting how you can be, you know, at that place in your career, but yet at the same time, not have any control whatsoever into what your destiny is going to be. And I waited on Sony to release my record. And I wrote the songs and, oh, it's not like this song, go back and write it again, do it again. And I ended up, you know, in the end, I think it was a blessing, because being able to go independent for me has been the best decision, because I have this nature in me because of those experiences of being held and being passed around like a investment block. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm being passed around like a TFSA, you know, like, it wasn't about music anymore. It didn't feel like it was in the 60s, you know, where like you would just make music and you didn't, it was something different. So when I broke away from that, I ended up being like, I don't need that approval. Mm-hmm. I don't need to be on a major label to still make the music I want to make. Yes. Would it be easier in so many ways? Of course. Mm-hmm. But it also came with so much corporate chaos. So when I decided to be in, you probably have seen so much of this, you know, just with like working for corporations at the end of the day. And I mean, all of us probably have. This is just the dynamic and the structure. And if it works, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't work, you're just shattered and starting all over again and not owning the rights to your music and all of that. So yeah. I have this real punk attitude of like, I've made it here and I'm not looking for that type of approval anymore or that type of permission. That's the word. I'm not looking for permission to create and write songs and mm-hmm. to be able to have my own platform. Like I'm on my own little platform. It's like right over here. And I like it. I like the world I've created. I like where I am. And I'm very grateful for all of that. And I'm grateful that it didn't crush me completely.
That had to be the most freeing feeling once you made that decision. And probably scary.
It's also, yeah. And really freeing. Yeah. It's also like really interesting because I'm at this place where I'm in the middle. I'm still kind of in the middle of this, like, it's really exciting because with everything we have and all the technologies and the things that we have, it's like I'm running my own label and I'm with my past history of film and TV, I've garnered this fan base that's allowing me to keep doing what I'm doing. It's almost like I'll go play a show in Antwerp and sell 300 tickets and I'll go play a show in New York and sell 300 tickets, yet I can't get a booking agent. Like I'll sell out a tour. Yeah. And like, be like, had I given a booking agent 20% of that, that would have been a nice little paycheck to the booking agent.
For sure.
But also just getting, but because of where we are now in the industry and because of this kind of like, it's kind of like everyone's investing in the artist that could be, how do I explain it? That could be a part of the machine. But then there's all these other artists who are really thriving. Like they're kind of forgotten. They're kind of like nobody really, they're not like on the billboard and they're not being thrown down people's throats, but they're really thriving over here. And that's super exciting because I want to be an advocate for artists who feel like it's impossible or who feel like I'm never going to be get the approval. I'm never going to get the validation. I'm never going to get, let's be honest, the corporate billionaire pockets to invest in me. How am I ever going to be an artist? It's like, no, you can be an artist and you can support a family now. Just do it. Just put out music. So that's been amazing to be a part of in this generation, couldn't have done, I think, in the 90s.
Yeah. Well, and I
don't know how you would do it. Yeah. No. Like, I don't know. I can't now. I guess that's one thing with social media. It's a great way to have outreach. You can just put something out there and like some guy is reacting to your video. You don't know who he is or how we got it, but it's a way for outreach for artists, for new artists.
Yeah. And it's really cool. And I think we're still in this gray area of like, what is that place? Because I think corporate wants to be a part of everything that's making money. So they're going, what's Alex Johnson doing? Like, how is she doing that? Mm-hmm. Why didn't we think of that? Why aren't we a part of that?
Uh-huh. doing well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at the same time,
then they're like, knocking at your door.
Yeah. So it's interesting to see those see those pieces come together, but it's also interesting having the history of like, no, I'm going to like build this label. I'd love to sign some artists when the time is right. And like, I'm hoping to become a real voice for independence.
Mm-hmm. That's so cool.
People know that like, yeah, you know what I mean? Like you can do whatever it is you want to do with your life. You don't need approval from anybody.
And there's probably a ton of people who maybe if they're listening to this or whenever you do this, that are going to be like, oh my gosh, I have not even known where to start. I don't know what to do. I'm so scared of this. It's so terrifying and overwhelming.
Yeah.
And to have someone to kind of help through that, I think that's just going to be really helpful to people.
Yeah, I think so too. And that's kind of becoming like, like the mission for me and,
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to be able to be that kind of beacon of hope, I guess, for the underdogs.
Oh yeah. And the fact that you've seen kind of all sides of this industry too has to be a huge help because know what it's like to be on trying to get in the corporate side and then now be the more independent artist.
Yeah, no, it is. It is interesting. All the ways, from working with Bruno Mars to like, I just remember me and Katy Perry being in the studio on the same day, both finishing up our records with Greg Wells and thinking she's a Scorpio like me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow. Like I thought to myself, wow, she's, Katy Perry. I remember when I met her, I walked away thinking she's got a really strong handshake. And then she got her record put out and I got my record shelved because they thought it was too unique. They had said it was too Kate Bush. It wasn't current enough for what was happening in the market. Mm. So to think that they do that with artists, hey, to think that they can just take an artist and just put them on a shelf, and it's still happening. Nobody's stopping it.
Oh, it's awful. I was going to say one thing you kind of mentioned is that you are fortunate enough to have, you know, a following from So Weird, Instant Star, things that you've been in. And we were noticing, like, going through, one great thing about the work that you've done too is that it's everywhere right now. You can go on Disney Plus and watch So Weird. Instant Star is all available, full episodes on YouTube. Final Destination 3 is everywhere. Have you noticed now that everything's coming to streaming that more people are reaching out to you or more people are watching these things that you did back in the 90s and 2000s?
I didn't notice that until you said that. And I am kind of seeing, I am feeling like it's a really cool time to make it work for me, to really hone in on like what that looks like for the next, you know, 20 years of my life.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how to explain it, and I won't be able to, because it would be weird if I could, but there's something about my story, and there's something about the way that I've kept pursuing music through everything that has really inspired a group of people to stay by my side. Mm-hmm. Enough to be like, you know, like I'm all, like people are crying around me all the time. Like I go and play a show and people are in tears. And it's like, I'm in tears, and it's a very emotional, like church-like experience. And I'm like, this is like, so I'm always taken aback by that kind of, I think that's the gift. I think that's the beautiful thing through all the trauma of the industry and everything that didn't happen in my career and all the things that were different than what I thought they were going to be. There's something there that's just a thread in my career that I'm so grateful for, you know, because I wouldn't be able to continue. I wouldn't be interested to continue putting out creative content if nobody cared. So,
oh, for sure.
You know, so that's been like the real silver lining for me. So when I see people come out, oh, I loved you in this and that, it's so fun. Cause it's like, and now I discovered your music. It's like, yay.
Yeah. You know? That is the good part about social media then. Cause like all the time, if I'm watching something, I'm the worst. And I'm like, all right, let me look up IMDb. What is this person doing now? Oh, they have an Instagram. Oh, she has music. It makes it so much easier to discover people this way.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. So it is exciting in that way. You can be a real entrepreneur now. Like you really can, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And then if you don't mind, is it okay if we ask you some questions about Final Destination 3, just cause we love that film?
Oh my gosh. Of course. Yes.
Well, first of all, what is it like to be in the best Final Destination, in my opinion?
I agree. I think that the first three, well, James Wong.
Yeah.
You can't, like, you know, that's the vision. It's like Andy Warhol, you know, you take Andy Warhol, you know, you get, like, it's like, this is, that's the lane, right? Like the lane is the James Wong franchise to me. And it was so fun filming them. I mean, that's another one. Talk about a cult classic. Like,
oh,
people,
my gosh.
Nip and Pip. Like, people love. I remember that was the first time I got into the New York Times, a review. And out of the whole movie, they reviewed me and said I was like a young Parker Posey.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, for me,
that's so cool.
I was like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was really, really cool. So that was one of the coolest things ever, being able to play that character. So I didn't audition for that character. I auditioned to be the sister.
Sister. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, so I went in to audition, to be the lead's sister. And then Amanda Crew, who was like my home chicken, we were like homies in, you know, all this. It was the scene of like these young actors in Vancouver, BC, who were auditioning, you know, so you were always in the room with these friends of yours. And you're like, are we up for the same role? Like, so
are
weird.
We competing?
I probably just called her my home chicken. And we were out both going in, and I had some attitude that day. I think I was just, you know, I think I just had some teenage angst. I was wearing like a Pink Floyd jacket and I had like rubbed my, I don't even think I'd washed my face, you know, from the night before. I was just like, I'm better than, like, I was just at that age where I'm better than anything, you know, like, I'm, mm-hmm. I don't need to be here. Like, probably pretending that, that I could smoke a cigarette outside or something. And so I got the part of, you know, I got that, I got the other girl. I got, you know, I guess you could say the dysfunctional goth chick is yes. what I ended up getting.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember when seeing something forever ago, maybe it was on the DVD or just some interview of yours from back when Final Destination came out. But now they used a prop head, obviously, for your demise.
Demise.
Were you on set when that happened, or were you not even needed whenever for your death scene?
Well, first of all, they had to make the replica of me. So okay. I had to experience the whole, like, three times they made replicas. So that's all, like, white. It's almost like paper mache.
Okay.
Okay.
Material. It's like a, but it's like a mold. So like I'm breathing through a straw. So they could mold my face as I'm holding like the look of the face that I would be making if, you know, naturally, mm-hmm. if a nail gun was going through my skull.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then they replicated that three times and I did watch it happen on set. So there's a behind the scenes somewhere. I don't know where it is, where I'm, they're filming me watching myself. Get the nails to the head.
What
it's
a
really
weird
horrific.
Thing to experience.
God, so right. So like a literal outer body because you're watching your not your paper mache body.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was weird. It's also weird to know that like anybody who really doesn't like me has access to that type of content. Have you ever thought of that before? Like
no,
I've been
not
murdered
until right
on
now.
TV.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like when I saw myself, what came through my mind was like, if somebody really wanted to hurt me,
mm-hmm.
they should watch this movie.
They have the footage.
Well, they need to get a life.
Let's also face it. You seem like a very, you seem just like such a nice and genuine person. I can't imagine anyone hates you. So at least you have that going.
Thank you. That's good.
We've immediately got your back. Okay.
Yeah.
It's not happening.
There you go. Perfect. Exactly. There you go. Thank you.
And then tell everybody where they can find you online, your music, everything like that.
So alexjohnson.com. I'm very active on Instagram and I'm on Patreon. So I do commentary, personal posts. I do demos every month from my past, like co-writes that I've done. I also give throwbacks from my career, which is cool. So you can join my Patreon. And I'm going on tour in April and May of this coming year. So weird that this year's ending.
Right.
I know.
It's so fast.
And I'll be announcing shows and dates for all that. So tickets are going to be going on sale. I haven't given the exact date out yet, but very soon. So watch out for my tickets because I'd love to see you guys out at the shows.
Oh, that's so exciting.
It's so exciting. Yeah.
Thank you so much again for taking your time and chatting with us. We really appreciate it.
Yes, this was awesome. This was a lot. This was like very fun.
Oh,
you guys are very, very fun. And you bring out like it's just been a very fun experience. So thank you for that.
Oh, thank you for saying that.
Oh my gosh. It's thank you. Thank you. And we'll see you at your show.
I can't wait.
Yeah, we'll see you at the show. All right, guys. Well, I can't wait to see the rest and follow your journey with this because this is such a cool idea for a podcast. So good luck with everything. And thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
I just want to take a second to thank Alex again so much for taking the time and coming on our podcast to chat with us. She mentioned it towards the end there, but make sure to go follow her on Instagram. She is at Alex Johnson Official, and Alex is spelled A-L-E-X-Z. I just realized that is in like the title when you click on this. But anyway, just in case, better safe than sorry. And she has a link tree in her bio that will take you to tour dates, her Patreon that she mentioned, a bunch of different places where you can listen to her music, things like that. And then, of course, as we always say, make sure to give us a follow on stuff, too. We are on Instagram and Twitter at BTTB Podcast, Facebook and TikTok at Back to the Best, YouTube.com/Back to the Best, and our website, BTTBpodcast.com. On behalf of Grace and I, thank you so much to everybody who listened to us, even for a minute this year. We really appreciate it. We are blown away by all the amazing guests that we got in 2023, all the new listeners that we've gotten, of course, everybody who's been here since day one as well. We cannot thank you enough for just hitting play on our podcast even one time. We started this podcast years ago with the goal to be able to talk to some of our favorite people from our childhood, the people that we loved in TV, movies, music growing up, and we got to talk to some of our all-time favorite people this year, and we cannot wait to see what 2024 brings. So make sure to tune in next time, where we are going to keep taking you back to the best.